welcome to MGO Podcast 8.16. If you can make it through the entire podcast, you get MGO points.
All right, before we do this, we'd like to thank our sponsors, the Bow Store, Underground Printing, Moe's Sports Shop, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshore Lending, Dayo Bookkeeping, got it right this time, Michigan Law Grad, Defensive Drivers Group, Ann Arbor Elder Law, and Peak Wealth Management. All right, we're just going to admit it. This is kind of a bandwagon podcast.
How dare you?
You made a facial expression at me. We're already in mid-season form.
We are. I actually didn't really realize we had started, but yes. We are very much in mid-season form.
Good. We're 20 seconds in. We've already gotten a very visual and very professional podcast.
Yes, extremely professional. Most professional.
So, Michigan basketball is suddenly good, and we decided we would talk about it.
We're suddenly doing a podcast.
Well, if you go back to like five games into this conference season, Michigan's sitting at like 184 in KenPom in defense.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I can't.
There was a point, I mean, I was in the Slack chat counting down the games left because it had reached a point of misery.
I'm going to admit this. I'm going to admit it. I slacked
you.
Oh,
you are.
I slacked you during the Penn State game. I think I'm done with John Beilein.
Brian was my Twitter mentions.
I was. To be fair, they were like 1-4 in the league or something, and they were down
1-3.
1-3, but they were down 14 points to Penn State, and it was just like,
well, the Penn State game was the second game of the conference season.
Oh, well,
but they did get beat by Iowa, I guess, before that, but like by Illinois, yeah. I could sort of understand the sentiment. I was starting to at least leave some room for that. Mm-hmm. And then Beilein's offense started happening and the defense came around.
You expect a John Beilein team to stay the same at your peril. I mean, this is kind of a version of that first, like, I'm done with John Beilein moment where they're 1-6 in the league and they go to Breslin and there's the aneurysm of leadership from Zach Novak and they go on a tear and they make the tournament. A very similar feel here, except
it's Derek Walton at a players only meeting.
Well, except I think that this team is a lot better and has more potential than that team.
Oh yeah, in terms of, I mean, like offensive upside, what they can do with two bigs who can shoot is something we haven't seen yet.
Like Michigan's in the 8-9 game right now, and I guarantee you that if they are in the 8-9 game, every one seed is going to be like not them,
nope.
Because the turnaround here is if you look at like the overall season numbers, it's one thing. You know, Michigan's 27, which is relatively strong for an 8-9 seed.
Yes.
But over the last 11 games, they're giving up 1.01 points per possession, which is decent.
Yes. Especially given the slate of teams that they've played over that span.
Goodish.
Yeah.
And if you look at adjusted efficiency margins, they're like 4th or 5th in the Big Ten in the month of February on defense.
With a fire-breathing dragon of an offense.
So, you know, if this is what we can expect going forward, this is a much better team than their seed is going to be.
Yeah, this is a team that could really make a run in March.
Because, I mean, it was just night and day, and God bless Maverick Morgan.
Co-MVP with Derek Walton.
Co-MVP. We might have to have tri-MVPs.
Yeah, no. We should probably get Wagner in there.
But so they have one game after the Illinois game where their defense is also bad. So they have a home win against Nebraska where they give up a big chunk of points.
Yes.
And then after that, they've been decent, acceptable, good. And then Mo Wagner has turned into German Durant.
Yeah. And apparently he thinks of himself that way.
Well,
Derek Walton said that in the postgame presser.
And it's
a little difficult to be. I mean, like, yeah. I don't want to say it. I really don't want to say it. But he is kind of trending in that direction.
I mean, he straight up outplayed the Big Ten Player of the Year.
He did. I mean, they turned that into a huge mismatch, even though, I mean, Swanigan is productive on offense, but they make it so that, I mean, Purdue is one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country, and they didn't even really give them many looks because Swanigan wasn't drawing the defense down in the way that he normally does.
Yeah, they only had 16 three-pointers, which was barely over a quarter of their shots.
And
normally they're at almost 40%.
Yeah, and Wagner, I mean, he gives up some position occasionally. He gives up some post buckets, but he's also, Walton called him a gnat after the game, and it was an apt description in terms of the way he plays defense. He's high risk, high reward right now, where he's going to go to try to poke the ball out. He's forcing some turnovers that might result in some buckets, but with his offense on the other end, he's going to outscore his mark right now, pretty much always.
Yeah, well,
with the way he's shooting, it's insane.
It's tough to judge because I didn't actually go back yet and be like, okay, which buckets in this game were on Mo and which were on Denal or DJ.
Yeah.
But even if you just look at Swanigan's overall performance, like he's 7 of 8 from 2, which is good.
Yes.
But he has 5 turnovers and no assists. So if you average it all out and put it into the computer that spits out the O rating, it's 109, which is good.
It's all right. But for Swanigan, that's a rough game.
Well, he's at 113 for the season. And, you know, if you go into this, okay, you get Swanigan and you have him have a below average offensive game by his standards, and he only brings in 5 rebounds.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a massive win. And that's not even considering the fact that Mo Wagner turned into a Dirk Nowitzki all of a sudden.
Well, and they also, with Wagner and Wilson out there, they pretty much made it so Purdue didn't even attempt to play their two best players at the same time. Like, because they could not play Haas and Swanigan out there together.
That's true.
And so that, and by the way, Derek Walton out-rebounded, or tied in rebounds with Haas and Swanigan combined.
Yes.
So that's something.
he had a double-double against Purdue. He had literally half of Michigan's defensive rebounds.
Yep. He's ridiculous. I've never seen anything like it.
It's weird because this basketball team has a couple of my least favorite players to watch. Not that they're bad people, just they frustrate me as basketball players. And then Derek Walton is just something else, man.
It's
especially this version of Derek Walton that is still rebounding like an absolute maniac, but also happens to be the best point guard in the Big Ten.
Yes.
I mean, there's no question about that. Like, if you look at the various point guards in the league, the only guy who has any kind of argument is Melo Trimble.
And in case you haven't watched Maryland lately, that hasn't been going so well.
And Walton's way more efficient. He's a much better rebounder, which is apparently something we're talking about.
Yep.
He actually leads Michigan in defensive rebound percentage, and nobody's surprised by that.
No. And I believe I'm going to check. He is 10th in the Big Ten in defensive rebound percentage right now.
So he's just been a rock. I mean, his defense is improved, I think, a lot from last year where there were a lot of blow-bys.
Yeah, he's still not great on that end. Like, you can tell when Simpson's in.
Yeah, I mean,
there's an uptick.
The lateral quickness just isn't quite there.
Yeah.
And I still kind of wonder if that injury spate he had in the middle of his career.
Maybe slowed him a half step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's managed to adapt. Like, there was that year or year and a half where he just wouldn't go inside. And he was shooting like 33% from inside the arc.
Mm-hmm.
And he's finally adapted and he's going, he's getting contact, he's making baskets, and he's
at 49% from twos. In Big Ten play,
which
is actually improvement from non-conference substantially.
And that's absolutely huge for him and Michigan's offense. Like, obviously Wagner turning into the best offensive post in the league.
Is nice. It's really nice.
I think everything goes back to Derek Walton, because if your point guard is able to produce like he's producing, then your defense just gets off balance and has to rotate, and it's a tough thing to keep up with.
Yeah, and with the two bigs who can shoot, it's just, I mean, I'm breaking down GIFs from this game, and you just start to see the way that Purdue's defense has to shift.
It's brutal.
But with players where, like, you stick Wilson or Wagner on the far side of a play away from the action, and you're taking a big man out of the paint and just rooting them in this awkward spot where they can't do anything.
And you mentioned that was probably a good omen for next year.
Yeah, I mean, because you got Xavier Simpson, who's maybe not, he doesn't seem to have the best, cleanest shot out there necessarily.
A little bit of a granny shot. He's working on it.
Yeah, I mean, He did nail the corner three in transition, which was nice. It was wide open.
He had a bit of a setup time.
He was able
it's like
to
watching
get
someone load a catapult.
So, I mean, he's not going to be Walton.
Yeah.
But we saw the layup that he had on Saturday. They ran a really gorgeous play that got Walton on a cut that got him to the baseline and got Purdue's defense starting to rotate and got them. So they actually had three players in a corner in about a space that was maybe like 10 square feet. Like it was a really beautifully drawn up play. But they just get Purdue's defense in motion to the point where Simpson gets the ball with Swanigan trying to recover on him. And Haas is rooted on the other side of the court because Wagner's standing over there. And you can't give up a 45% chance at a three. So Simpson has the space because he's really quick to knife between those two guys and get a layup before Haas can recover. And that is something that they can repeat next year because you don't necessarily need your point guard to be a great shooting threat if both of your big men are.
And this is kind of what we thought we would see when Beilein came in, right? We would get the Pitsnoggle kind of action.
Yeah, and we just when he brought in Donnell, that was what we expected.
Yeah.
And that never materialized, but two wings ended up being bigs, and that worked out.
Well, it's it just looks so brutal to defend.
Oh, like, yeah. I mean, just... Matt Painter came up and did it. He had a whole long thing during the press conference talking about the way that just the chess match that Beilein puts you in terms of matchups, because, you know, they had to go from putting Swanigan on Wagner to, when that was clearly not working, switching, putting Swanigan on Wilson, putting Vince Edwards on Wagner and trying to survive that way, and then just switching everything. And that gives Michigan a whole bunch of mismatches. It looked like it worked for Purdue in the beginning of the second half, but that was mostly Michigan missing open three-point attempts.
Yeah, and I do think that – so Wagner picks up a couple of quick fouls and has to go to the bench, and Michigan plays well, so he's actually on the bench for 9 minutes.
Yeah.
And I wonder –
we didn't get to see Michigan really exploit what they were doing.
Yeah, we didn't get to see them adjust, which would just be like if Wagner can post up Swanigan, what is Vince Edwards going to do?
Yeah.
Like he's got everything. I mean, he can take you off the dribble if you're 7 foot, and if you're smaller, he can just post you up. And then he was 4 of 8 from three. He's a 45% three-point shooter on the year. I mean,
it's a ridiculous thing to have.
It's insane.
You know, they're starting to dodge questions about him in the NBA, and that he won't be an early entry guy this year, because not only is he kind of on the fringe of the NBA radar right now, it's also a really strong class for big men. So it'd be unwise for him or DJ Wilson to test those waters this year.
I talked to Sam about this, and he said that the NBA is interested, but the vibe they get is that
it's for next year.
For next year.
Yeah.
So I would like to see the fully armed and operational version of these two guys.
But at this point, I think the assumption is we're getting one more year of this, and we better appreciate it, because I think he's gone after this.
Yeah, and taking Austin Davis doesn't look so strange now, because it's like, I mean, you're going to need him.
Yeah.
All right. So the defense.
It exists.
I wrote Don Brown ? Down. And the reason I did this is because, you know, before the football season, we kind of talked about how Don Brown's defense has often had kind of a setup year.
Yeah.
Where he ends up at BC and they're kind of mediocre. I mean, they're bad because they were bad the year before.
They're still BC.
Bad. UConn, same thing. Maryland, same thing. And then in year two, you kind of get the takeoff. And I wonder if we're getting a little bit of a compressed version of that, because there's more games in a basketball season. There's more opportunity to improve over the course of it. And Michigan brings in Billy Donlin, who's an excellent defensive coach. He proves that as the head coach at Wright State. And they're dismal for large portions of the year. I mean, they're great in New York, and then they just fall off a cliff. And now maybe you're seeing that impact actually occur, because, you know, I think everybody who covers Michigan basketball on the internet has that clip of Duncan Robinson first doubling Swanigan and then dissuading two different guys.
I'm watching it right now.
You are.
Yeah.
Like, literally.
I have the GIF pulled up. I'm just appreciating
podcast. It.
It is. But yeah, I mean, I think if you're going to look at a play that demonstrates how far Michigan has come, it is Duncan Robinson making an absolutely spectacular defensive rotation
on three different guys.
And then having that, and then pulling down like a Mansum rebound at the end of it, too. And then immediately starting a transition opportunity that ends with a wide open corner three for Xavier Simpson.
And I think it says something about the particular pathologies of Michigan basketball fans. That, like, everyone's like, oh my God, that was awesome.
Yep.
And meanwhile, we have an offense that is technically a little bit better than their national championship offense.
Yes.
And nobody really mentions that.
No. People still occasionally complain about the big men shooting threes. Like, that's a problem.
You know, the worst part about the games where Michigan is inevitably a little cold from three-point land is listening to, like, Sean Morris be like, oh, you got to get the ball inside. I'm like, Sean Morris, have you watched a basketball game in the past 20 years? Like, this is basketball.
I mean, he's been present for them, but I'm not sure his eyes have been open.
Everybody. Dokić even. Like, Dokić is better about it than some people.
Well, he at least has a pretty decent understanding of Michigan's system.
Sometimes they're not going to fall, but if it's an open look, it's an open look. Like, I have a problem when Irvin has an open look, and I know that he's not shooting well, but I'm like, dude, you got to take that.
Yeah.
And then you dribble yourself into an off-the-dribble two-pointer off of it, and I'm like, it's not good.
Yeah.
But
they've done a better job of avoiding the Zach Irvin late shot clock experience lately.
Well, Irvin's done a good job of de-hero balling his game.
Yes.
Like, you'll get one or two possessions like that, and I think that's kind of inevitable.
Yeah, I mean, end of clock stuff. You're going to end up with some awkward bad shots.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, like, those possessions where Irvin has the ball for 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Which did happen once against Purdue.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, he's a guy who at one point was the alpha dog on this team, has kind of been raised like that. So he's going to try to get there, but I think he's done an admirable job of returning to third banana status.
Yeah, I mean, he had multiple games in the middle of this Big Ten season where his usage was over 30%, well over, where he was a third of the offense and playing all the minutes. And he's barely scraping 20% in most games lately.
He's dialed it back. And when he's doing well, he can push it a little bit more. Like, he had 16 very, very important points against Rutgers.
Yes.
And then he had 4 against Purdue on 8 shots. And, you know, if that's bad, Zach Irvin, you can live with that given what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, at least the volume is reasonable.
Yeah.
And he has been – he's still a very valuable defender because of his ability to guard 2 through 4 quite capably. And even occasionally get switched. I mean, he can hold his own getting switched on to centers because that's something that he unfortunately had to get quite used to.
Oh, yeah. That's like
the first few years of his career.
The Novak, like, versus Blake Griffin thing. If you're a Michigan wing, that's just going to happen to you at some point in your life.
So it was a bit of a trial by fire early on in his career, but that has made him a better player. And he has been, especially in transition, still a pretty nice player in terms of his ability to push the pace and find the open guy. I think he's been pretty good in that. So as long as he's kind of playing within himself, he's still a valuable player and a valuable enough player where Michigan can continue to bring Duncan Robinson off the bench and kind of pick and choose their spots with him, which really helps his offense.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, if Irvin can just, like, settle back into that role he had as a freshman where he's mostly
spot up shooting,
and like, if he can get back to, like, hitting 40%, like, that'd be real nice.
Yeah, and he's good. I mean, he's hit, you know, he hit 3 of 6 against Rutgers, and that was mostly spot up stuff. You know, there are some flashes where you can see that freshman Irvin game coming out again.
Because that's pretty much the last piece, right? I think you're getting everything you're going to get out of everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, it's either going to be that or, with the way Simpson has been playing lately, and this happened against Purdue, Simpson is starting to cut into Irvin's minutes a tiny bit.
Yeah, because they'll play both him and Walton at the same time.
And that works because Walton's so good off the ball, too.
Yeah.
And
our tiny rebounding point guard, two guard.
So it works out. So they have managed to finally develop some. And a big development we haven't talked about yet was the stint in the second half where John Beilein played DJ Wilson at center, and that worked.
It did. And I think part of that is because Swanigan isn't very long.
Yeah.
So, like, if you had, like, a 7-foot guy like Haas who wasn't, like, having a bad game, like, he missed a lot of bunnies.
Yeah.
Then I think that'd be a problem. But for guys who are really bothered by his length, it's tough to even get a post entry against him.
It really is.
And that's where Michigan did their work. They didn't do it after the catch. They got owned after the catch.
Yes, they did.
You saw Mo Wagner, like, there was I just embedded this, the gif that you made of the poke to the turnover.
Yeah.
And Caleb Swanigan's trying to post up from the 3-point line.
Yes. Initial positioning was not always easy to attain for him.
So Michigan denied post passes really well. and that allowed them to shut those threes down because, you know, you weren't doubling very much.
Yeah, and when they did double, they did a very nice job of timing it and getting the rotations behind it where yeah. those generally resulted in turnovers.
I kind of want them to flop a little bit more.
Like there I can't was, believe you just advocated
there,
for that.
There was like a Swanigan post up where Irvin was on him, and I'm like, all right, he's just going to back him down to the post. And like, if you set your feet and he runs you over, you might get that call.
Yeah, you might.
Especially because Swanigan's like on a foul already, and it was kind of early, and I was like, I might take that chance, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you might look like you play for Duke, but...
you know, Duke's been pretty good. Sometimes that might not be the worst thing.
There's honor to think about, of course.
Yeah. I mean, they defended their honor quite well on Saturday.
They did.
So.
They did. And then, you know, DJ, I keep saying that he looks like Michael Jordan for about 3 minutes a game. And
he's a very interesting player.
Like those like swooping drives to the basket, he's able to like hit those little short jumpers that are a lot tougher than you think.
Yeah.
Like those 6 to 8 footers where he's just at the rim and he can just kind of flick it in.
Yeah, Beeline's talked about how he's kind of tried to dissuade him from taking those short fadeaway jumpers because that is apparently his pet shot. But he does make them. I mean, Beeline's like, okay, they go in, so, you know, fine. I mean, but he does want him to look for other things first. And he has gotten better at he had a couple really nice baseline cuts that led to buckets in this game. He has searched for other ways to kind of get his offense going. They did a very interesting thing towards the end of the first half in this game where they ran a high pick and roll with Wilson as the ball handler and Wagner as the screener, and Wagner slipped it and it was unstoppable.
Yeah.
Because who's denying that entry pass?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I asked Beeline about that in the postgame presser because I hadn't seen that yet and was quite intrigued.
I don't think anybody's ever seen that.
Yeah. And that was a play off a baseline out of bounds. The initial look was actually to try to get Walt in the corner three. And then that was the backup plan was to run a high screen with Wilson and Wagner. And I'm guessing that's going to be more than just a backup plan before too long, because that worked really well.
Yeah, who runs a high screen and roll with your center and your power forward?
Your four and your five, and it works. And they could have switched it around. They could have done it with either guy.
Yeah, I think the Golden State probably did it at some point.
Yeah, when they got Draymond Green playing the five, sure. But,
Other than that, though.
I mean, this is a really interesting team. I mean, they could have had Wilson pull up for three off of that, and that would not have been a bad shot.
No, and then you've got Wagner plunging to the basket. The one kind of thing that I want to see more of from TJ Wilson is that GR3 garbage man stuff on offense.
Yeah, it seems like every once in a while they just kind of have to remind him that, like, offensive rebounds are a thing he can get.
Yeah.
And then he makes a concerted effort to go after them, and it works. But it's not consistent yet. And
no, I mean,
it'd be nice if that was.
I mean, I know Beeline is like super enthused about getting back and isn't really a big offensive rebound guy. But if I was him, I would give DJ free rein on that.
He did say like he literally told Wilson how many offensive rebounds he'd have over the past however many games.
Okay, so this is a DJ thing. It's not a Beeline.
This is because he reminded him about that heading into Rutgers, and then he had 6 offensive rebounds against Rutgers.
Yeah.
And then mentioned in the post game.
Like, well, there was an SI or something where they have the anonymous Big Ten coach just dish on people.
Yes.
This one was vintage Joe Tiller level, I think. There was a lot of trash talking in there.
There really was. But it was on point.
I mean, the guy flat out called DJ soft.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't like calling DJ soft because I've seen soft. But he's not entirely wrong. He needs to be a little bit more active, especially when it comes to like pulling down rebounds.
Yeah. He's still got the mindset of a wing a lot of the time.
Especially when Walton's gone. Like, they're going to need someone to step up, and I'm guessing it's not going to be Xavier Simpson. That's my wild guess.
Like, I could see Simpson surprising us compared to what he's done this year. Like, things have really started to click in a way where you can see that working. But in terms of like the guys
as
who are going to drive the
offense.
Oh, no, not as a rebounder. Sorry.
I'm specifically talking about that one aspect of the game.
In that case, agreed.
Okay.
it's probably not going to be the guy generously listed at 5'11".
I was not dissing Xavier Simpson's overall game.
Yes. Okay.
But I was dissing his ability to get 11 rebounds against Purdue.
That's fair.
Fair. I think even Xavier Simpson's mother would agree with that. So A Northwestern fan just ran the numbers in February, and Michigan was the best Big Ten team in that month.
That does not surprise me.
That's a surprising statement, even though it doesn't surprise me either, though. They barely edge out Purdue, and they are like miles ahead of everybody else.
I mean, Wisconsin and Maryland have had rough stretches
ugly
lately.
Stretches, yeah. Northwestern has fallen squarely back onto the bubble,
yes.
Which we're going to talk about a little bit more in our next segment, which we are going to get to right now. Did you know the black and white striped referee uniform seen on the field today was created in Mohs? In the early days of football, officials wore white dress shirts, bow ties, and beret-type hats. But when an Arizona quarterback confused Ypsilanti's Lloyd Olds for a player and mistakenly passed him the ball, he asked his friend George J. Moe to make a distinctive shirt to set him apart. The new striped uniform was effective, but hated by fans. Olds was met with plenty of boos from the crowd when he first wore it in 1921, and more when he called targeting. Moe Sports Shop is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University or online at mosportshops.com.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Ace, I wish to speak to you now of Andrew. Each day, Andrew Deogracias used to go to his corporate consulting job, where each day he felt the darkness. Now he serves small and mid-sized consulting firms and nonprofits across the country, providing bookkeeping and accounting services. He finds others, usually fellow Wolverines, who left the darkness but need a little help.
Andrew Deogracias is a seasoned Big Four strategy consultant. He should work for the blackness.
But Ace, he'd rather work for guys like us. He'll keep us from missing deadlines and personally handle onerous tasks like editing and formatting our forms and finalizing documents, research, or analysis. If we did consulting work, he could help us with those deliverables, which you don't usually get from a bookkeeper.
But Brian, we do our work in silence.
No, he's an independent freelancer, so he'll do the work himself. And Andrew's offering a deal to Michigan alumni, one free month. Just mention the promotion code Each Day We Work when contacting him. Find us at deobookkeeping.com and schedule a free consultation today. That's deobookkeeping.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
Comet tails. Screeching frequencies of pulsing infinity. Awake in the hive, where the sap is collected, the process perfected. The galactic siren sounds! Down the dimensions, curled up strings inside the point.
Get all the pebbles again!
Mr. Laurel.
Get all the pebbles again!
So, this is not a vintage Big Ten.
No. Tom Izzo apparently today just called it a quagmire of teams, and that is spot on.
Yeah, that's pretty spot on, because like you think that Purdue's pulling away, you think Wisconsin's pulling away, you think Maryland's pulling away, and like Iowa reaches up and drags them back to the pack.
Yep, and suddenly Minnesota is in a position to possibly get the 3 seed or even the 2 seed. Which is infuriating after that game.
Disgusting.
Yeah, I'm so upset about that, especially since like it's probably going to cost Michigan a double bye.
Yeah, and that's probably a seed line in the tournament, and a seed line for Michigan right now is a big
rather deal. Big deal, because they're projected on that 8-9 by most everybody who's updated, and that means getting a 1 seed if you win that game.
Yeah, so, I mean, this year, like, they could get Gonzaga, and that's just going to be a total coin flip, because...
Yeah, hey, Gonzaga just lost at home to BYU. Like they.
Well, no, and like, oh look, it's Gonzaga playing itself. Like,
yeah, yeah.
That's... We've even got a big German dude as a center. Yep. Like, you know.
So yeah, I don't. Big Ten's tough to figure out. Like this tournament could be anything.
Yeah, it could be. I do appreciate Northwestern's
commitment to being Northwestern.
Well, just commitment to drama. Like I was really disappointed when they were 18-4, and it's like, yeah, they're in. Like I want them to get in, but I want them to get in.
It
as
has
like
to come down
seed.
To the last game. Yeah. It has to come down to like, you know, it's a do or die game.
Like I need that like shot of like Welsh Ryan just full of people who don't know if they're getting in.
Like, and like some of them are still doing homework, but they're actually nervous this time.
That's fair, but mean. That should be our site motto.
I was Fair about to say, like, I'm pretty sure that's our whole shtick.
It might have been a compliment. Who knows? Yeah. I don't know what one of those is like. But so Michigan is, as you mentioned, an 8-9 on basically all of the brackets.
Yes.
So they have Northwestern, they have Nebraska. Not really great material to move up with, even though both those are road games.
Yeah, that's... I mean, maybe they can get up into 7 seed territory if they win those two, and
I think they need to like
do a little bit of a run in the tourney too.
Yeah, they need to grab one more like good win, and there's not like a whole lot of those available in the Big Ten.
I mean, the thing that could actually help Michigan move up is the fact that like Maryland's currently on the 7 line.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, they've been plummeting. So, and that's, you know, with the thing with the bracket matrix is a lot of those things still haven't updated for their latest.
Yeah. What does Crashing the Dance say? They're pretty good and updated to modern times after Michigan beats Purdue, not the long, long ago when we don't do podcasts about basketball, but it's a great, I don't,
they've got Maryland 1 spot in front of Michigan.
All right. So Michigan can, I mean, it's not necessarily about Michigan getting an impressive win. It's maybe someone in front of them takes a bit of a tumble.
Yes.
Which is very possible on that.
Entirely possible with the Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Maryland all in front of them right now.
And like KenPom has their last 2 games as a coin flip, but they're against Northwestern, which is in the aforementioned tailspin.
Yes. That the percentage win for that game has steadily been going in Michigan's direction.
Well, and their last month is crazy. They're like 2-5. One of those wins is against Rutgers. Okay, that makes sense.
Fine.
The other one is at the Troll Center.
Yes. Unbelievable. If I hadn't watched that game on television, I would not believe it happened, even though I'm looking at the result on KenPom right now.
But that was also kind of a start of a slide for Wisconsin.
That's true. that's the thing with evaluating these Big Ten wins right now. Right. Is it's really tough to pick out what was actually good.
Like, I'm kind of annoyed that Wisconsin is losing now because, like,
same here.
We beat them.
That was a signature win.
That's stop losing.
Especially against Michigan State when it really could have helped us.
Mm-hmm. Like, so is even one Big Ten team going to get a Sweet 16 team? Like, Purdue's got to be the only shot, and they're probably, like, a 4 at best.
Yeah, they are hanging on to the last 4 seed on the matrix right now, and I would assume they drop from there. So I don't know. It's looking like unless one of the top couple teams is the one that makes a run in the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah.
Well, it's might just, get excluded.
I mean, it's tough for the Big Ten to be actually pretty good when Indiana is headed to the NIT. Yeah. Michigan State should be headed to the NIT, but they've
turned
RPI.
It around.
No, they gamed the RPI. Shut up. Shut up, Ace. Gamed the RPI.
Too.
And, you know, Maryland is busy squandering talent like they do every year. Not a vintage Wisconsin outfit.
No, we've started to see the holes open up there.
Yeah, and so it's not a huge surprise, but you don't really have any of like the second class citizens except Minnesota kind of make it a push.
The surprising round. And I still think that is largely a paper tiger. And I do not trust that team at all.
Can't watch them and just have them.
And when that team is entirely dependent on Reggie Lynch staying out of foul trouble.
Yeah, staying out of foul trouble and then just getting all the offensive rebounds from their terrible, terrible, uncontrolled drive to the basket.
Yeah.
We're a little bitter about that game.
Yeah, just a bit.
A little bit bitter.
Yeah.
41 free throws, was that it? 48?
Yeah, I think it was 41.
41.
10 more than Beeline had ever given up at Michigan.
I think it just happens every year to every Big Ten team. There's just
you get Ted Valentine.
Yeah, you go on the road and you just get totally boned.
Like, I mean, having a technical foul called on an assistant coach because he was getting up on the court so he could address his team, and that call comes from the other side of the freaking court. Mm-hmm.
And then the game.
That's
goes
bad.
Overtime.
That's real bad.
That is bad.
And it was after a garbage call too.
Yeah, and so like he's anticipating the fact that the bench will be correctly upset at the garbage call that has just happened, and he compounds matters. TV Teddy, everybody.
Yep.
TV Teddy, the one person who can get that really annoying Spartan Avenue blog to be like, "This is wrong."
Yep.
Like every tweet I've ever seen from that guy is just like trolling Michigan, and he was like, This is untenable. We can't do this. This is not basketball. And I'm like,
agreed. Somehow.
Yeah.
Incredibly.
Yeah. Well, I was like that with Aaron Kraft. I liked Aaron Kraft. And Ohio State fans would like retweet me being like, this guy's all right. And that's the last time they've ever done that.
Yes. Never again.
Never again. I can be like, I think JT Barrett probably got the first down. And they're still douches to me. So. Are you going to do?
Such is life.
Trog gonna trog. We thought we would end our basketball segment with a brief and too early glimpse at next year.
But it's kind of exciting.
Because, like, we're projecting, you know, the last 11 games of Michigan basketball into the next year. Because let's believe the Don Brown theory where the defense
is starting to click.
Is
and
taking a step
this
forward.
This is a real thing.
Because it's a new system and this is something that we can have our faith in going forward. And this is an 11-game sample here, so it's a pretty sizable one. It's also conference play, so it's not like going up against a High Point.
Yeah.
Who I think they literally played this year, right? They played literal High Point.
I believe they did. That was the exhibition.
So you get Mo back. You get DJ back. You lose Irvin. Doesn't seem like a huge loss right now.
Oh, especially with Charles Matthews kind of just sliding in.
Like, even if Matthews doesn't, like, do much more than Irvin offensively, he can at least replicate his defense, probably. He's going to be the most athletic kid Beeline's had.
Maybe ever.
Well, GR3.
GR3 was pretty. He did just win the dunk contest.
Yeah, so he'll probably slide into number two.
Yeah.
And that's pretty good. You get Rock back. You get Duncan Robinson back. And then your big question is how do you replace Derek Walton?
Yeah.
And that's like...
And then clearly that's going to be a team-wide thing. You're not going to have any one player do what... I mean, you're going to need...
But it's weird that you're losing your best point guard and your best rebounder. That's not common.
In one guy. not very usual.
And but... X has come on here, and you can see how he's going to make it work.
Yes. Yeah, we did talk about kind of how he can function in this offense. And his defense, he does have to cut down on fouls.
I think that's a common freshman overexcitability thing.
True, but it's also like it very much fits with how his style of defense is very aggressive.
It is, but that's good.
It is, mostly, but he's committing 6.5 fouls per 40 minutes right now.
Yeah, and if like he has to like carry a big part of the offensive load, I think that is a problem. But you're going to have a senior version of Rock who can handle the ball. You'll bring in
Eli Brooks. And I do like him. I mean, for like a three-star point guard that people were not very excited about, he's got size and athleticism that we haven't seen from a point guard since Morris.
Yeah, so he's a guy who might be one of those classic Beeline underrated kids.
Yeah, we'll see. I like his. To be honest, I'm more excited about Brooks and Isaiah Livers, who I'm going to see on Thursday. So hopefully I can confirm this. But I like both of those guys better than Jordan Poole right now, and Poole is the highest rated one of the commits. But he's kind of a just a shooter type, even in high school.
Brooks had a Nova offer, didn't he? Like that's kind of
I think so. Which like, is yeah, that
I'll take that.
They were the national champions last year.
They're okay at basketball. So if you can get, I think you just need like one bench player from those guys because you have Duncan on the wing.
Yeah,
you'll have Teskey, who hopefully will become less of a baby deer next year.
Yeah.
You'll have Davis coming off the red shirt. And you should.
It'd be Watson. Maybe things will start clicking for him. He's there at least.
He's present. Yeah. You get a lot of freshman to sophomore transformations. He's obviously off to a real rough start.
Yeah, he's got a long way to go, obviously.
One of 18 from
three
is not.
To not even be cracking this rotation. Mm.
But I mean, you don't really need another wing with Duncan, so.
No, but the fact that he hasn't even really gotten, like, garbage time is.
Yeah, when Sean Lonergan is kind of nose to nose for him with playing time, it's not a great sign.
No, but, they don't need him necessarily to be that contributor next year. Matthews is such a huge unknown.
Yeah. He could be
an All-Big Ten player. He could be, like, functionally the same as Zach.
He could
Irvin.
Be J.C. Mathis or that kid who transferred to Gonzaga from Kentucky.
Yeah.
Kyle Wiltshire.
Yes.
So and nobody really has any idea. I do have a lot of faith in the ability for John Beilein to get anyone to be a shooter.
Yes.
So, like, Rock came here. He was not a shooter.
No.
I mean, DJ's first couple years, he thought he was a shooter and was not. Now he is. You see Wagner take a quantum leap forward in his, like, if the biggest problem with Charles Matthews' game was the fact that he was an unrefined offensive player, he's going to be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, 1 year of just entirely focusing on that and getting
the
system down.
Shirt, yeah.
Yeah. Like, he got to just prep.
Mm-hmm.
So that is exciting because we haven't really seen a player who could be that combination of athleticism and skill.
Yeah.
I guess Karras. Would qualify.
Yeah. But we didn't get to see him.
Yeah, the fully formed version of Karras was hurt.
And now it's in the NBA.
Which is depressing because he's good. He's good in the league.
I mean, like, I knew that's, like, I'm not surprised by this. I'm just you got to be kidding me.
Yeah. They didn't catch all the breaks the last couple of years, to say the least. Well, Walton said that about his, like, ridiculous leaning three-pointer. Was just like, you know, we haven't always gotten the breaks going our way, and it was nice to have that happen.
Yeah, except literally, I had all the breaks.
Yeah,
in a literal fashion.
That's true.
Wait, this is a bummer, man. This shouldn't be a bummer.
I'm excited about next year's team. I really think that they're,
especially because you can see the ways in which both DJ and Mo get that increment better.
Yes. And it's mostly on defense and on the boards.
Yes. I mean, well, getting stronger will help DJ play through contact. Same with Mo, although Mo doesn't need that. Like, he plays through contact spectacularly well already.
Yeah, but a little bit of strength would really help his defense and rebounding right now.
Yes, absolutely. So just getting that extra bit and then, like, having Mo kind of play a tiny bit more within himself. His turnover rate is actually good for a big man who generates as much offense
as he
does.
For a guy who puts the ball on the floor as much as he does, it's pretty impressive.
But there's those times occasionally where he just kind of gets ahead of himself.
I mean, they're fifth in the country in turnover rate with him as a big part of the offense.
All right. Withdrawn. Withdrawn. All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk a little football with a gimmicky top five that's kind of on the boring side, but whatever. In 1934, a salesman from Champion Sportswear walked into Moe's Sports Shop. There, he teamed up with George J. Moe to create the very first University of Michigan-branded shirt. After seeing the high demand for this product, Champion went to the other Big Ten schools with the same proposal, and the collegiate apparel industry was born. Moe Sports Shops is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University or online at 100years.moe. That's 100years.moe.
Everyone has their own definition of true wealth, and it's our job to help them understand what the definition is for them. We look at everything from college to retirement and lifestyle planning, as far as estate planning and building their own legacy, helping them understand what their goals are and then backing in from there.
Peak Wealth Management founder Nick Hopwood has been a part of the MGO blog community from almost the very beginning. If you've put in the work to reach that point in your career, it's probably time to talk to him about your financial future. Stop by his office in Plymouth or visit peakwm.com/MGOblog. In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across Southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
The sun must set at the end of every day, and the curtain must fall at the end of every play, and every little bubble ever blown must someday pop.
Like presents on Christmas Day, it doesn't seem to stay. Or a cheese souffle, it doesn't last all day.
All right, give me a top five, which is the top five things you would like to see happen in spring. Top five developments that will give us confidence going in the 2017 season. Ace, your number five.
Okay, this is more about 2018, but I have to stay on brand and mention Brandon Peters because I want to hear that he is progressing to the point where he is not only a very viable backup option in case Wilton Spate gets hurt, but where we have confidence that they will have a good starting quarterback.
So you're projecting Wilton Spate to the NFL after this year?
I guess.
It's
not nuts, but at least if that happens, they have an option. And I mostly just want to know that the next quarterback is on track.
Yeah, that will be. We heard some chatter last year that kind of died down after Spate started playing well.
Yes.
So was that chatter like the Rudock / O'Corn chatter from a year ago, or is just clearly based on the fact that the starting quarterback wasn't playing very well?
Yeah. You want to hear that it was more than just kind of like an encouragement.
Right, yeah.
Like a strategy. and it was actually true.
My number five is the Dwumfor prophecy, which I think is an awesome like Robert Ludlum name for a gimmicky top five. But so Dwumfor comes in. He plays a little bit early. He's not a big-time recruit. Michigan does steal him away from Penn State, which is encouraging.
But he did kind of have the, like, come hither, Rashawn Gary vibe to his recruitment, the Adrian Whitty factor, if you will.
Correct. So he's good buds with Rashawn, and taking the kid is like, well, can he play, or is this just kind of a
Rashawn Gary is worth two scholarships type of thing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
He was a Penn State commit, and that is encouraging because Penn State has done a lot of work with three-star type defensive tackles.
Yes, they sure have.
And we've heard from some people close to the program that they think that he's actually going to be an excellent player. And boy, does that plug a big hole.
Yeah. I mean, nose tackle. I mean, even if you're expecting Brian Monet to be good.
And Aubrey Solomon to play immediately.
Like, Monet has never been healthy.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking about Solomon's
a true freshman. Solomon's a true freshman.
Who didn't enroll early.
Yeah. So you would like another guy there at the very least.
And Dwumfor is like literally the only guy.
Yes. So, I mean, so unless you're planning to reshuffle the entire defensive line to get Hurst to play nose, which would be suboptimal.
Yeah.
Dwumfor is that dude.
So Mike Dwumfor is a guy I would very much like to hear good things about. This
important piece.
Ace, number four.
Donovan Peoples-Jones is in fact Donovan Peoples-Jones. And yeah, that is exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, there's couple big holes at receiver now.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen much out of the guys who are returning. At least the outside guys. You know, we've seen some with the last year's freshmen.
Yeah, you gotta assume that the blocking that Crawford managed to put in last year is going to give him a head start.
Yeah, and he showed some upside as a receiver too.
We'll see one catch that was
pretty darn nice. Pretty, yeah. So we'll see. And McDoom obviously showed a lot of promise as an athlete. We didn't really see him downfield.
No.
And what he can do down there. But and then you've got, we still don't really know with Drake Harris. We have no idea with Mo Ways, except that it's gotten late.
Yep.
And Peoples-Jones is a five-star talent, and we've seen, like, if he
there are just get the route tree down, show up and just immediately have an impact. It's about 40% of five-star receivers.
Yeah, and he certainly athletically is on that level, and it's all about how quickly he can get down the route tree.
Because he didn't really have one at Cast.
No, it was a go route or a slant route or a stop screen. and that's all they needed.
Right. That's all.
It was incredibly efficient. I would like to hear that he is not just making the occasional amazing catch in practice, because we are going to hear that, but that he is routinely producing.
I want to be very careful about my number four spelling. So this is a very visual podcast time again. I have Thick Chris Evans, and I want to point out that it is T-I-H-C-C, Thick Chris Evans, because that's what people say on Twitter. I just want to see Evans with like 10, 15 more pounds of muscle, maybe maintain that explosiveness, but break some arm tackles. Because if he can add that to his game, like he has that
that's
short
a
area quickness.
For a couple of years.
He's got explosiveness downfield. He thinks the game really well. Just the cuts that he makes seems to – he anticipates where tacklers will come from and decides not to be there. So, I think he's got massive, massive upside, and if he can just thicken up, man.
Yeah. I mean, if you take that run in the bowl game and add some tackle-breaking ability –
add some meat.
That's pretty exciting. Mm-hmm.
So, I know Michigan has kind of a deep stable, so this isn't like – necessarily pressing for this year. So they've got three or four guys with if Drake Johnson comes back.
But that does add some serious upside to the offense.
I mean, if you're looking at all the guys who are contending for carries, I think Chris Evans is the guy who is the most likely to be an A. Like,
yeah. Isaac is up there, but he's a guy who hasn't put it together yet.
Right.
And is
so like, is he going to be like a Doak Walker type running back? It doesn't look like it at this point.
No.
Chris Evans actually has all the potential in the world. And could be that. Asian number three.
That somewhere between Jordan Glasgow and Jalen Kelly-Powell and Josh Metellus, that there is a true Viper who can stay on the field for three downs and actually play against most styles of offense.
That's good.
I would like for them to be able to replicate. I mean, you're not going to have Jabril Peppers out there, obviously.
Correct.
But if they can at least maintain that ability to play their starting 11 against most sets, I think that would be huge for this defense. I'm just having a hard time seeing them take a leap forward if you're having to rotate Furbush or Uche and get as situational with it as Don Brown had to do at Boston College. It just seems like early
at Boston College, late they just played that Milano.
That's true. Yes. Which again, it'd be really nice to have
exactly
a three-down Viper
point,
out there.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Because Jordan Glasgow's a walk-on.
Yeah, but he's a Glasgow.
He is a Glasgow, so that he is a different
there's
category
like a, there's
of
walk-on. There's like a special like category of like Glasgows who are no longer walk-ons. Kovacs and Glasgows.
Yeah, the Order of Kovacs. Mm-hmm. So he's got a good chance of being in there.
I mean,
I do like Kelly Powell's skill set quite a bit.
He had one of the best block sheds of the year.
Yes, on the fake punt.
On the fake punt in the Ohio State game.
Yeah, so he did show something there that you don't normally see on special teams.
No, man, that was a great linebacker-ish play. So we'll see if that works out.
And Metellus is mean. Mm-hmm. We got to at least see that. And Kelly Powell, I mean, we saw in high school, has some cornerback in him as a safety.
Yeah.
And that can be quite critical.
So the good thing here for whoever ends up here is that they're going to be playing behind Rashawn Gary.
Yes, that helps.
So
someone is eating some blocks,
right,
and like, maybe destroying them.
They might have an opportunity to just flow free an awful lot, which would be excellent. My number three is clear cornerback starters, and I don't want Brandon Watson to be one of them. No offense. too many Watsons listening to this podcast. God, I hope there aren't any. But, I mean, we saw LeVert Hill come on last year and have a pretty good – like garbage time season where he's coming in. He has a couple of nice pass breakups. He's in the hip pocket.
Yeah.
Looks a lot like Jordan Lewis. And then David Long, who I think everybody expected would be ahead of Hill, kind of had some injury issues, and we think that he will get a red shirt.
Yeah.
And so that's why you saw Hill instead of Long late into the year. And a guy who has everything that you would possibly want in a corner with length, character, speed.
Yeah,
hips.
Short of grabbing a five-star, he's about as no doubt as you can get at the cornerback position, which admittedly is not no doubt.
But he was cornerback is pretty no doubt.
Yeah.
Like those positions where it's just all about athleticism those are the most reliable ones. And he was close to a five-star, probably should have been one. So, like, I want both those guys to be the clear starters at corner. No offense to Ambry Thomas, no offense to anybody else, but like...
Oh, I'd be a little concerned if Thomas was the starting corner.
Well, he's enrolling early, and he's a good player. Like, I just want there to be clarity there.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go into the season being like, I don't know who's going to play there.
Yeah.
Ace number two.
That Mike Onwenu is treating defensive tackles like so many grapes.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I'm ready to see that. But that's as much as I want the offensive line to be good. I also just want to see that dude being awesome because he's a complete anomaly of
sui generis. Yeah, I really need to have him next to Daniel Falele on the same offensive line.
Oh my god,
I just need to see that.
Yeah, we already have a Daniel Falele like
obligatory section every week, which we usually
it's
do.
Just him murdering somebody.
I mean, we did that with Aubrey Solomon and Rashawn Gary 2 months before signing day.
No, this is already happening. Full year out.
Full year of Daniel Falele hype. So hopefully we get a payoff there. My number two is Rashawn Gary takeoff. We already got a little bit of that from Jim Harbaugh on Twitter, but
yeah, that was fun.
he played really well, but he was stuck behind an NFL possible first rounder in Chris Wormley.
And he had a lot of plays that was just it was close to recording a stat.
Yeah.
And it wasn't quite there.
But he graded out very well in UFR. He graded out very well to Pro Football Focus. And with increased playing time and the fact that he's going from a freshman to a sophomore, and he's the number one recruit in the country, I expect him to be elite this year. And that starts with hearing it in spring practice.
I expect we'll hear that for some reason.
Yeah, this isn't really a good one because it's not something that I don't expect. I'm
number one player in the country is good.
Right. But I mean, I want to hear it. It'll be fun to hear.
It's still, I'm totally on board with hearing that number one as possible. That Cesar Ruiz is as advertised.
Oh.
Because even if they don't necessarily need him at center, they might need him at guard.
Or they might.
And if there's an injury, they're definitely going to need him. So.
Because that, having that is key to, bouncing Bredesen to the outside, which I think they have to do.
Yes.
And maybe even Cole, but probably not.
Yeah. So. I mean, I know they're going to hope that Cole sticks at center. But if they have to put Ruiz in, and he's 315 pounds, he could play guard.
Absolutely.
So whatever combination they come up with, if you're in need of a sixth lineman, it's probably him. So it's great that he's enrolled early, and it's great that he played at IMG, so he actually has
high-level
experience. Yeah. And he played center. So if there's going to be an offensive lineman ready as a true freshman to play on the interior, it would be him. But it'd be nice to hear it.
It would be nice here. My number one is Wilton Spate is on point because we had a very strange season from Wilton. He had that UCF game where he was absolutely on fire and yes. He scuffles and scuffles and scuffles, gets the bye week, and he is the best quarterback in the Big Ten for about a month after that. Then you have the Iowa game. How much of that is the shoulder? You don't really know. How much of the shoulder is the Ohio State inability to go deep at all? You don't know. How much was his middling bowl performance.
A carryover of that.
I've heard some things that I think that you can definitely chalk a lot of that up to a shoulder injury that was maybe not, I can't play severe, but was pretty freaking severe.
Yeah.
Our report about that was not entirely wrong.
No.
Wasn't entirely right, but it wasn't entirely wrong. So, to have the version of Spate that we saw in the middle of the season, really, I mean, that's an NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
And his inconsistency between games was pretty odd, but you can see with one more year of Harbaugh, you can really see him maturing into a gunslinger who makes your Brandon Peters point very necessary for 2018.
Yeah, and I mean if you're going to get a leap from a quarterback, usually it's between year one and year two of starting.
Yeah, and one thing about Spate that makes kind of the NFL talk a little bit less silly for a guy who probably isn't on Raiders right now is he's older than a lot of guys in his class.
Yeah, I mean, he took an extra year of high school because of an injury.
Well, he had a broken shoulder bone, so it's just again, I think so.
Yeah, he broke. Yeah. He had a severe collarbone break in high school.
So It's one of those things where I think you could see him test those waters next year if he has the kind of season that would justify that.
Yeah.
And if he does,
like for that to happen.
That's good news for Michigan.
Yeah.
One thing we did not mention at all was anything at offensive tackle. We kind of danced around it. You kind of danced around it. I ignored the offensive line because I'm frightened of it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I didn't want to say something as obvious as like Ben Bredesen is good.
That is kind of important, though, because he was not good last year, but
that's
he's a true freshman. He's probably going to be playing tackle.
Lot of his issues were things that aren't necessarily things that would apply to him playing tackle, like his pulls.
Well, I mean, mental issues are mental issues.
True.
And then he wasn't a fully developed college offensive lineman. He didn't have the strength.
Yeah.
So, you know, year one to year two is often a big leap for a lot of players, none more so than offensive linemen, but he's absolutely key.
And he's probably the most important offensive lineman. I mean, Cole is going to be the best offensive lineman, but in terms of the guy who's most important to the success of the line is probably Bredesen.
Or whoever the other tackle is.
That's true.
Which is like...
That is the other frightening thing. Is
Andrew Stuber?
Who even is that guy?
That's my guess right now, which is kind of scary.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean...
He's a true freshman. He's a 3.5-star true freshman, who I think is a good underrated player. But I've seen true freshmen play, and unless they're like... Cyrus Kwanjo types, it's not a great look.
Yeah, and he's not enrolled early either, and neither is Chuck Filiaga.
Yep. So I don't think we can hear anything that's going to make me feel better about the offensive line, so I kind of left that out.
Yeah, let's hope for a grad transfer maybe.
If I was Michigan, I would be all over
the Cal tackle. Yeah.
Like, he started, they were a good pass protection line a year ago. He's 6'8".
Like, even if he's not great, the odds that he's better than, like, Juwan Bushel-Beatty seem pretty good.
Well, and you know you have a spot because Michigan had a plan for the number of guys they wanted in this class.
And that plan involved Devin Asiasi still being on the team.
That's a downer.
That is a real bummer.
That's a downer. Oh, the honorable mention to I want someone to be a kicker. That's my honorable mention.
Yeah, a kicker would be good.
Yeah. All right, we are going to take one more break. We are going to come back, and we are going to talk about hockey. So, goodbye, everybody.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com.
Hey Ace, have you ever been in a car accident?
I have not.
You have to have been in a car accident for the purposes of this ad.
I apologize for not being in a car accident.
No, you say you've been in a car accident.
I've been in a car accident.
Now what happened to your insurance rates?
They were skyrocketed through the roof.
Thank you. This is a professional podcast.
This is a very professional podcast.
Well, if you are in a car accident and your rates have skyrocketed, the state of Michigan actually allows you to avoid this by taking a defensive driver's class. And Defensive Drivers Group will provide that to you at a low cost. At DefensiveDriversGroup.com, take their online course, complete it as 99% of their applicants do, and get the states of Michigan, California, and New Jersey to wipe your record clean. There are no hidden fees, and the founders, who are both Michigan grads, will give you $5 off for mentioning this ad. Just say MGoBlog.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Know what I'm saying? I know. catch them slipping. I know how to play 'em. Yeah, I know how to catch them slipping. Why don't I just sit back? Let them make a dumb track. Act like it's a hype track. Play scared and don't bite back. Let them play big shot, thinking that he's real hot. All the time I'll be scheming on a big plot, baiting the man till the kid gets sand strong. He's getting real soup.
All right, we are contractually obligated to do some hockey talk right now, even though it's a grim, grim thing. We thought we'd bring in Dave Nasternak, who's our hockey guy, to do so. Say hi, Dave.
Hey.
You're much better at that than Ace. Always. Always, always, always. So we've been watching Michigan play this year, and their record didn't really reflect their play, and now it does.
Yes. Finally, after the last couple of years of winning some games, they've been able to, well, I should say they have not been able to sustain some of the rates that they had the past couple of years.
And you know, we talk about Corsi a lot, and Corsi is basically just a shot attempt ratio. So not shots on goal, not shots that get blocked, but just shots that you're attempting versus shots the opponent is attempting. And that's broadly more predictive than actual goal scored, because there's a lot of variance in goalkeeping and whatever or not. And Michigan, for the duration of this year, has been one of the worst Corsi teams in the country.
Yeah, I haven't looked at their overall numbers in terms of what the year as a whole looks like.
Yeah.
But in each individual game, I try to keep track by period. And they don't win a lot of periods.
You show me these sheets, and the sheets are even worse than the Corsi, because there's always this cluster of excellent scoring opportunities in the slot for the opposition, and Michigan is usually kind of on the perimeter a lot.
Yes. For example, this past weekend, we were able to look at the second game on Saturday, and I believe there was maybe five shots from the slot in the last two periods for Michigan, whereas I think that Ohio State was pushing 20-30.
And this is a game they won 1-0.
Yeah, I mean, that says something about the goalkeeping, obviously.
Yeah.
But as far as generating offense by forwards without a man advantage, there's
been grim.
Very little.
And, you know, some of this is a talent level thing. Like, there are only two, three, maybe four guys I'd be comfortable as, like, a top three line forward on this team. And you got Lockwood, who's obviously very good. You have Kyle. And then
Kyle's been hurt the past few games, and Lockwood's been hurt about two or three times.
Yeah,
and didn't even go to Ohio State this weekend.
So they're really reliant on those two guys, and probably Cooper Merity at this point.
Yeah, he's been a nice surprise.
Yeah. Well, not a surprise. He had an excellent freshman year. He just didn't play in the first half
of
the season.
Yeah, well.
So they're basically eliminated from an at-large bid at this point. They're like 10-17 with some ties thrown in there. They're 0-2-2 in the last four against Michigan State, which is the worst power conference team in the country in RPI.
I'm not sure that Michigan State does not have a Big Ten point.
It's not against Michigan. And their program is just sad at this point. Like, this is year six of Tom Anastas, and they're getting worse every year, and there's still like no indication that they might move on.
In terms of the Corsi score that you're talking about, the ones that I've tracked, Michigan has pretty much played them in 50-50 games. So if you want a mirror image of what mm-hmm. Michigan looks like, you can look at a school not too far away.
So this is pretty much the worst case scenario for this year. And there's not much of a light at the end of the tunnel, because the kind of perpetually uncertain status of Red Berenson has, like, they have a couple of guys coming in next year who are like fringe first rounders, like Josh Norris is one. They have Nick Pastujov.
Nick is on the team. I believe his younger brother.
Is it Mike?
I think it's Mike.
He was supposed to be kind of a first-round talent, but he's had some issues, and he's kind of fallen down boards.
He's also been hurt this year.
Has he?
Yeah.
So there's not like a Kyle Connor, Dylan Larkin quick fix on the way.
Does not appear to be the case, as they've had the past few years.
So the way you get better is by changing coaches.
Yeah. It's going to have to happen sometime. I know we've been
talking about it for
the past few years, and there's one obvious candidate that we like to talk about. I think that there are other ones that could potentially creep in. The more that you dig, there's a few names that I've found I need to do a little more research to sort of back some numbers, but there's definitely guys I think they can look at. You've seen teams improve that
and play consistently very well over large stretches of time.
Well, they've made the tournament multiple years in a row.
At places like Providence and Lowell and Union.
Quinnipiac, which people probably have not even heard is a school.
It's in Vermont. I know that much.
Maybe.
It might be in Vermont. It might not be. And then, of course, Mel Pearson at Tech, who they're second in the WCHA this year. And it's not a power conference, so they're not in line for a bid. But, like, in terms of maximizing the potential of the Michigan Tech program, I think that he has done that.
Yeah, I'm not sure what else you can really do. He gets guys that are not as highly recruited and turns them into decent hockey players. I think there's a couple guys that have gone to the NHL that he sent.
They've had a couple guys drafted, but, the way that college recruiting works is that everybody gets scooped up so early that there's a lot of variance in, like, what you actually get when the kid gets to campus. And then it becomes about coaching, and coaching can have a very big impact on a team in as little as 1 year. So this is the first year of the Granato era at Wisconsin, and they went from one of the worst teams in the country last year, and they're on the bubble right now. They're 15 in RPI. They're 15 in the pairwise. If things fall right, they have a shot at an at-large bid. And it's just tough because, age catches up to us all. You are going to have a slowdown, and I think Michigan has experienced that slowdown. And it's super tough in hockey because, when Joe Paterno is slowing down at Penn State, you have 9 assistant coaches. And in hockey, you have 2.
Yeah, there's a quote that a guy I work with in the press box posted on Twitter, and it was from Red Berenson. He talked about how they finally figured out that they're not going to be able to skate with everyone and have the dynamite, I think is the word that he used, in terms offensively.
Yeah.
So now that they've been able to adjust, they feel like they can compete better on the defensive end. And my first thought is just kind of like, well, maybe we realized that a few months ago.
But is there really any evidence of that improvement?
I mean, this was post Ohio State.
Yeah, but you're still talking about a game where they're just giving up buckets of chances from the slot and their goalie stands on their head.
I'm just saying that's what he said. And my first thought was, I thought I figured that out a little while ago.
Well,
you probably might have, but When I keep looking at it, and I have to look at these shot charts, and I have to make the X's and O's and squares smaller and smaller and smaller so they can keep fitting into the small space in front of the net, I'm thinking that guys are getting in there with relative ease.
And this has been a thing that's been consistent for the last 5 years. Even last year when they made the tournament and they won a game, they did it by outscoring their legion of mistakes.
And when I first started looking at it, last year was really interesting because you'd think, oh, well, they're a really good offensive team, and they're going to have these crazy numbers. But when it really comes down to it, they just had an exceptional power play that scored at a ridiculously high rate. And they played teams like Penn State, who was good, not great, and Minnesota, again, good, not great. But they played them in 50-50 games, and they won because they would get that power play or that they would have some nice goaltending.
So it's, I feel bad because I'm upset that Red Berenson is still a hockey coach, but I think it's been past time, and I'm a little concerned that when it comes time to make a decision, if there is a decision to make and he doesn't just retire, that last year will be kind of like, oh, he's still got it. I just don't think that. I just think he managed to have one of the best lines in the history of Michigan hockey, and the rest of the edifice was still decaying at the rate that we've seen.
Well, yeah, and you've seen what happens when they take away those top 4 guys is – now you have a few nice goalies and a couple of fringe pieces.
Yep,
and not much else.
This will be the 4th time in 5 years Michigan's missed the tournament. And at that point, I'm kind of like, it's time. So I haven't talked about hockey very much this year because it's just, I feel terrible about it. Like, I don't want to say the things that I think about it because, Red Berenson rebuilt this program from scratch. And I like support them renaming Yost to Berenson Ice Arena, but it's time.
I mean, when you watch this team play and you watch the actual hockey moves that are made and the systems that are implemented, it's very sad.
It's tough to watch.
Just where we're at, and you have to look at where you're at and move from there, not from where you want to be.
All right, if you got to the end of the segment, you get the Fandom Endurance Merit Badge for podcast listening.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. Along with Brian Cook and Ace Anbender, I'm David Nasternak. Here's to Maverick Morgan!
it better than us?
Nobody!
I don't like you because you're dangerous.
That's right. Nice, man. I am dangerous.